Welcome back, everyone. I'm really excited about today's guest. She's one of my favorite people in the PR industry and the communications industry in general. We've worked together on several projects. She's one of the most helpful people that I've ever met. Beverly Hunt is a communications professional with 30 plus years of experience working with news organizations, social justice groups, nonprofit organizations, professional athletes, artists, and government organizations. She's managed the public relations operations for the National Rainbow Coalition, the DC Lottery and Charitable Games Control Board, and currently hosts a plant medicine podcast. I'd like to welcome Beverly Hunt to our Capital Press Club podcast series, In the Business. Beverly, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Dr. Campbell, how are you? Good to see you today.
You too, you too. Beverly, tell us how you got into the business in general. You have so much experience, and from what I remember, it wasn't the most direct path. You had some other intentions in mind from the beginning.
I certainly did. I did not start out as a public relations professional. In fact, I was a print journalism major when I transferred to Howard University from a broadcast major. I loved writing. I was involved in the Black press here. I came from New York City, then to upstate New York, and then here to Chocolate City. And the idea to write about everything going on was amazing to me. But eventually, I started getting opportunities to do public relations work. And while back then there was a clear distinction between the jobs, being a journalist or being a publicist, and people kind of shook their fingers there or their noses at you a little bit if you cross the lines. Eventually, many of us switched from journalism to public relations. If you like helping people, as you mentioned, if you like developing relations with people, if you are a people person, public relations is awesome.
Yeah, and who inspired you? You said you got some inspiration from past mentors or professors as well, right?
Well, you will not believe this because, Colin, I was able to find a lot of mentors back 31 years ago when I was a member of the Capital Press Club. One of my professors at Howard University, Professor Bob Asher, he was a journalism professor. He also was on the editorial page board of the Washington Post. And he took me under his wing. And he helped me get my first job in the Black press here in the area. He helped me get to certain organizations. Bob was not even of color. Bob was one of our white professors in the journalism or school of communications department. But he introduced me to Black Journalism DC. And when I got to the Capital Press Club, I believe Lon Walls was running things at the time, I got to meet Ophield Dukes, and Ophield Dukes was Mr. PR. Ophield Dukes also was a journalist before getting into public relations, and he was another man who really took me under his wing. He took so many of us under his wing, and that mentorship meant the world to me. He taught me how to do it. He made me run for the Beepers vice president when he was a president, and I was in my 20s and I didn't know what to do. He said, you call people up and you introduce yourself and you get that vote. And I was afraid of letting him down. So I would do what he said and he would let me work on some of the jobs that he had coming in. And so quickly, public relations overtook journalism. But as many of your PR people will tell you, public relations keeps you in the journalism game and that you're still interacting with people in the press constantly.
Yeah, and there are a lot of crossover there as far as application of skills, what you need to know. What would you say is one of the fundamental things that you share with journalism as a PR professional?
Wow. I think the first thing that people don't give enough credit to would be the power of being a good writer. So one advantage of people crossing over in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s from pure journalism to public relations, when it wasn't done or the lines weren't as blurred as they are now, is that we had the advantage of being able to know what a reporter wants, and that we also knew how to write. When you can write, you can communicate effectively, succinctly. You can let folks know exactly what you need. You can also let them know why this pitch is tailored to them, that it's not something you're just throwing out there in the wind and hoping for the best. Journalists don't like that. They are intellectuals. They want to be challenged. And if you want to get them to cover their stories or your stories, you need to give them things that they need. So I think that ability to write helps you with the whole goal of being able to communicate effectively.
That's right. And a lot of people seem to underestimate the importance of writing. They see the glad handing, they see the personality, they know branding is important, but they tend to overlook writing. And I wanted to talk about your trajectory a little bit. As a strong writer, you couldn't have achieved some of your success without being a strong writer. But how did you get into those various jobs that you did get, working with the DC Lottery, working with nonprofits? How were you able to gain that access? Was it just your writing in general and you just applied like a lot of people do? Or did you have connections and networking really helped to really accelerate your movement into the business?
Networking is crucial in this town, as I know you know. And I did not take a traditional route. First of all, let me say I didn't graduate college until 25 years after the anniversary of when I was supposed to graduate undergrad. And so I've been working in the field forever. I was someone who worked while going to school, and I couldn't afford it. Howard University didn't have an evening journalism program back in the day. But because I had such good mentors there, and I cannot undersell the value I got from all of my schools I attended, but in particular, Howard University, those networks, those friends, those mentors that you got for life were literally for life. And so I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't come from a background of professionals. My father was first generation attending college and becoming a nurse anesthetist. My mother eventually became a teacher, but we didn't know anything about the business world. I didn't know anything about the government world. But what I did have was an awesome network and people who encouraged me. And so I was freelancing. I think I worked for about three different outlets, and I had a job that wasn't going well at all. The boss wasn't very nice. I had to get out of there. And so I called one of my friends and I said, "You know what? I am ready for a square job." I was 27 years old, and I had enough experience writing and volunteering and doing different things, all kinds of jobs. And this young man took my resume and brought it to some of his other colleagues in the government. And I originally was called in to interview for a job somewhere within the mayor's office. And somehow I landed up as the PR director for the DC Lottery. And I'm grateful. And so I tell everyone I talk to, have a network, follow up. The young people today sometimes are not as aggressive as they should be. I didn't have a lot of money, but I put money aside from my little check so that I could take people out. And so if you can invite someone to a brunch or a breakfast or for a cup of coffee or tea and get to know them, you are eventually socializing with them. And people appreciate the fact that you're spending your money and your dime as a youngster to learn more about them. It says that you're not looking for a free ride, and they will treat you as a professional and they will help you get along.
Yeah, one of the things we do in this podcast is we try to help educate and definitely bring up younger generations. And I wanted to touch upon a point that you just expressed a little bit, and that is the power of networking. Now, we're in an age where we text each other an awful lot. And in fact, if you look at some people within the culture, they are almost intimidated by actual phone calls and having that voice-to-voice contact instead of just texting back and forth. There's actually a little bit of anxiety associated with that more intimate form of communication. Can you talk to us about why it's important to maintain that level of communication with people, even if it may seem more conventional or old school, and maybe to some degree, a little bit nerve-wracking?
Well, as you know, people will support their own. People will support the people they have relationships with. And yes, I know that a lot of my peers who are in younger generations have very, very, varied relationships via text. There's nothing like an old-fashioned phone call. I think when I first met you many years ago, I met you at And I was inviting you to a press conference. But instead of just sending you press releases and going back and forth, we took some time to talk to each other to find out what we were doing outside of that particular project. And eventually we had more and more conversations until we got to the point where we could pick up the phone with each other, whether it was to ask some advice about something or to learn about something or to find out about new opportunities. And I think people aren't on the phone enough doing those things. Many people in this area, younger folks, think I'm a superwoman because I can get press without a budget or do all these impossible things in their minds. But really, a lot of it is my relationships. A lot of it would be me calling my colleagues in the press and saying, listen, I have a very non-traditional but interesting client here, and I want to tell you about them. And even though you don't hear the big splash now, what they have going on ought to be covered. And you are unable to do that if you're just sending out a press release and an ask.
Was there ever a big opportunity that you received out of networking? Something that you didn't expect at first, but because you made that extra effort to have that more intimate or personal contact with someone, it led to a big opportunity.
Almost every single job I have had in this area, and I have spent all of my adult life in the DMV, has come about because of connections. There have been a few jobs that I got out of the blue. Those were not my better opportunities. The best opportunities I got were jobs that people knew about, that people could vouch for me. People were already in the environment. They could help me figure out the culture. Those were the jobs that helped me excel. That same professor I told you about that introduced me to the Capitol Press Club many years ago, I remember I got my first job, big job, as the director of communications of the National Rainbow Coalition. It was 1987. I was only 23 years old. And Reverend Jackson was running for the second time, and I was so overwhelmed. And this same professor, who is sitting on the editorial board of the Washington Post, came to my office, heard what my first assignment was, which was a major press conference, and helped me from the perspective of an editor and a journalist tell me exactly how to set it up. You need those people around you who will support you. But in order to get those people to support you have to be willing to support as well. You have to be willing to get out there and volunteer to get out of your comfort zone and say, I'd like to help you with this. I think I can bring some things to the table. May I tell you that when I first started attending press conferences or receptions, and I didn't know people, I would feel sick to my stomach as a kid. I felt totally out of my league. But the thing is, you just have to get through it and try to help out other folks once you figure out a little bit there.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I think that has changed a little bit, obviously, is the internet. And on top of that, that additional layer of interaction and sometimes hyper interaction, social media. When someone is a little bit trepidatious about trying to create contacts or generate a list of contacts in today's day and age where texting is more popular than calling, like we talked about. How does one build their contact list? How does one build their networking base in order to have a more robust group of people in which they can pitch stories to or they can receive information from?
That's a good question because things are much more difficult now in terms of just getting that information by picking up the phone or emailing. Back in the day, the culture was that if I wrote a press release and sent it to a media organization, the protocol was that they would call me back, that they would let me know whether my pitch was something that they could use, and they would let me know when they would run it. I remember the culture changed when I once called, I think it was City Paper, and I said I sent a press release and I wanted to know what the status was. And I basically got a don't call us, we'll call you. If we want you, we'll let you know. And I was like, wow, how do I get past this? And that's why you have to rely on these relationships. You have to be able to pick up the phone and say, listen, I have a client that nobody has taken an interest in. You're over at Channel 5, you're over at the Washington Informer. Would you at least look at this and have a chat with them and see what you think? And sometimes those relationships, not sometimes, all of the time, those relationships make a difference.
And so how have you used social media today in your jobs? There's so many different channels out there. There's one acronym I like to say that people need to be fit with their social media or with their media outreach, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, of course. But then there's YouTube, there's LinkedIn. How do you fit those platforms into your job?
Well, it can be overwhelming. So you start where you are. So during my workday, I have so many hats for things I do. I do straight up public relations and branding. I produce. I have a plant medicine show where I produce and I'm a host. So I need access to many guests all the time. And as you get older, the people who were your mentors start to retire. They start to pass away. You have to constantly get new contacts the way the young folks who just get in the field do. So what I may do, for example, I'm going to use you as an example. I remember when I met you and I was very impressed. We had a couple of emails, and then I met you at the actual function, and I said, I need to stay in touch with him. And we did stay in touch. And sometimes it would be a quick question, sometimes it would be passing information. But eventually, when you are able to bring something to the table, you would be surprised how people open their arms to bring something to the table to you. Not all the time, but many times. And so I try to tell folks coming after us, if you're interested in getting in, bring something to the table. There's nothing like bringing something to the table to make folks want you around.
Right. So you're bringing value to the equation, and I think that is what you're saying makes a difference.
Sure. So if I know, for example, that you are teaching at certain schools and I see an article or a podcast talking about something that I think that would relate to your students. Me sending that to you, one, is something that will help you. Two, it's something to let you know I'm thinking about you. And again, we're living in a world where you cannot all the time sit and have 3-hour lunches. But you certainly can keep the communication going. I will say this, though, I am old school and I keep relationships going in person too. I will tell you, there is nothing like having an in-person colleague. Many of them become your friends. And then the world is your oyster. You're networking together, you're discussing things together, you're finding out information you wouldn't know if you just were sitting in your own little shell. There's a lot to be said for taking that time, getting out of your comfort zone, and just asking somebody for a cup of coffee.
Yeah. How are you managing the quicker pace of public relations and communications? Being that now it seems that people are sending stories out, receiving information, sharing information 24/7. Instead of that conventional 9 to 5 cycle, people are tweeting overnight just before they go to bed, first thing in the morning, sometimes in between that, if they happen to be up, people are sharing information. How has that changed the pace for you or your job for you?
That's another good question. So you can drive yourself crazy if you try to keep up with the 24-hour news cycle that we now have. You're right. It's so different, Colin, from the 9 to 5 we used to deal with. And there are certain advantages and disadvantages. The biggest disadvantage would be who needs the hecticness of 24 hours? But the advantage is if you have a crisis, you now have the platform to get your side out immediately. And we all know that when something goes wrong, the most important thing is to stop what you're doing and give your version of the truth. Because if you don't give your version, the only version that counts will be the version that's out there.
That's right. Yeah, there was, how does that proverb go, or that aphorism that that a lie gets around the globe 10 times faster than the truth or something like that. I don't know how it goes, but it's something like that, right? Where you need to get out that narrative as soon as possible because a mistruth can spread a lot quicker and be more prolific at times.
And you know, one other thing I would say, I think that in order to stay sane, we also have to maintain boundaries as professionals. Folks will call you 24 hours a day and make you feel like you are inadequate if you choose not to respond that way. I think the importance is to show people that you're consistent, that you will get back to them, that you do get the work done, but maybe there are parameters where you stop at 7 o'clock. If you're a working mother, maybe you have to stop at 5, but they can know that they'll get something at 8 in the morning if they need to. I think we have to define those parameters ourselves based on where we are in life, because if we don't, that will be done for us.
And speaking of crisis communications and the 24/7 news cycle, I'm sure there were some public relations professionals whose phones were blowing up incessantly after what happened several days ago at the Academy Awards.
I
Now,
knew that was coming.
you had to have known that was coming. And for those of you, I'm sure all of you watching this know what happened, but we saw when the famous actor, the man of the night, basically, who won Best Actor Award, slapped comedian Chris Rock, a man who built his image off of a pretty much a clean image, violence-free, his hip hop music that I used to listen to back in the late 80s was devoid of all cursing, and he was proud of that, kind of keeping this very clean, almost pristine image, which it seemed to just fall apart that night. As a crisis communications professional, as a PR professional, how would you have handled that situation?
Before I even answer you, I want to tell you this. Of course, this is going around town, and every PR person has had at least 200 phone calls about this, literally. You have to remember, when you're dealing with celebrities, sometimes there is only so much you can do. And I want to say that because at first I got into the flurry with everyone else. Oh, yes, she should have done this, or her organization should have done that. But you know, in my past life, I represented athletes, and professional athletes have money and they're young. And they will do what they want to do, my dear, and many of them will. And so I remember times I gave certain advice about what to do, what not to do, and that advice was not taken. And you can't, so I can't imagine that this woman and her firm did not give sage advice. I would assume when you're dealing with two celebrities like Will and Jada on that level, they are going to control their own narrative. And the best you can do is make suggestions because, after all, Jada has her own media platform with the table, correct? The Red Table Talk.
Red
So
Table
I
Talk.
would think, what is it again?
Red Table Talk. Yeah, that's
Red
right.
Table Talk, exactly. So I would think that their publicist, certainly we saw her with them, and I'm sure she gave her advice, and I'm sure it was great advice. But sometimes it takes a minute to be received. Sometimes it's not received at all. So again, the best you can do is give good advice and also let folks know why you're giving the advice you're giving and what the alternatives are. If you do not do X, you'll probably have to deal with Y. My suggestion would be to do X so that Y isn't there. And when we talk about that one particular crisis, the biggest situation that happened immediately was that there was not the immediate inclusive apology. And that was very unfortunate because, as horrible as it was, if there was an immediate mea culpa to Chris, things probably would have gone down a little bit differently and a little easier.
Yeah, and as we know, the Academy is supposed to make a decision on what they will do with Will Smith, but he's resigned already. What do you think was behind that strategy?
Well, if I had been advising him and the advice, and I'm assuming there was advice for an immediate full apology wasn't taken, the backlash would be such that I would ask my client, what is your goal? The way we always do. What is your goal here? And if the
Right.
goal was for Will to keep his award, the best thing to do would be is to resign because you're showing that you're censoring yourself. You're not just saying the words, you're now doing something about it. And as we all know from the reports that have come out, it still allows him to be in attendance. He can still attend every year. As far as I know, he can still receive awards for new work. And so not being able to vote may be a milder punishment for him and his career long term than being shut out of the whole process. I doubt very seriously that they would take away his award, but there is the chance, given what's going on. We all know that there are predecessors who've done a lot worse and they still are carrying around their award,
Yeah.
but you never know. And so I think that was a very safe move. I think it was a wise move.
Great. You know, and before we go, I think we're almost out of time here. One of the things that people are looking at is Will Smith's brand. And nowadays, 21st century, a lot of people are their own brand. What is your advice to people who want to build upon themselves, build their own brand, their own networking, try to make their own money as their own entity? What are some things that people could do in order to promote that?
Are you talking about maybe from the beginning of their career, and are we talking about publicists and public relations people, comms people?
Yeah, not just comms people, but anyone who wants to create their own social media website,
Okay.
their own following, you know, and just really be what I've kind of coined a mediapreneur, someone who
Okay.
builds their own enterprise, but around themselves as the center point rather than a business or a corporation or an organization.
Sure. Nowadays, it's easier to do than ever. There are a lot more options, but it's still not an easy life. Because I do so many things, I work hard and I work more than many of my colleagues working just the traditional 9 to 5. I wouldn't trade it for the world, but I would say again, collaboration is key. We are, if you are trying to build a network, You can't do that alone. You can post all day and all night. You could have the best content in the world. You can have the best clients in the world. If you're not getting it out, it means nothing. You made me feel good earlier when you introduced me as someone you considered very helpful. That's what you want to be. A helpful person gets helped. And if you don't get helped, get out of that space where you're giving and not getting. You have to collaborate. I meet so many young people in this area who are super, super talented, but for whatever reason, they aren't as connected personally. They don't socialize together. They don't share their projects together. That's very important. It's better to make a little less money while you are learning things and having the support and collaboration of others and their networks than just trying to get out there and keep it yourself. It's a hard way to go when you're not collaborating. So I would say two things. Learn first from the best, even if you have to volunteer. I put in some time, many places, and I learned from many, many wise people. And I'm so grateful that I did that. And I also was shown reciprocity. And that was in most cases, and that was a good thing. And it gave me a chance to learn how to do it so that when I did it myself, in many cases, I can get support from my mentors as well as an intergenerational push. And so I have friends of all ages, of all levels and walks of life. And I just try to keep these people in my world, people who are also givers, people who are good people, who are kind people, and who want to make a difference, who want to change things. I think we can all find our niche. We just have to figure out what it is we want in life and find some other like-minded folks to collaborate with so we can build that brand and build those businesses of ours.
Well, thank you so much. Some sage advice there from Beverly Hunt, a communications professional, PR professional, and all around just a great person. Thank you so much for joining us at the Capital Press Club podcast series In the Business. And we hope to speak to you soon, Beverly.
Very glad to be here.